go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 69 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Yes, yes, give me one more, B-Man. Yes, we've done it, babes and studs. We have reached the pinnacle, episode 69. Shout out to Rob Gronkowski, his favorite number. This opening is going to be all things 69. Let's begin in middle school. I was in seventh grade. I had to take the bus to school every morning, even though the school was only about a mile away. But hey, it gets cold some days here in Connecticut. So I was friendly with most of the studs, the boys in my neighborhood. So we would take the bus. We all, of course, were on the same bus stop, and we'd get on. We had the same bus route every day. And every day on the way to school, we would drive by this plaza, and one of the storefronts, the number of the store was, or the mailbox number was 69. And we started very early that year. Every time the bus drove by, we would stand up on our seats and yell out, 69, and within a week, we had everybody on our bus yelling out, 69, when we drove by that plaza, and we did it every day on the bus that year. That was the highlight of my 3 years in middle school. That shows you how pathetic the B-Man is, or how pathetic I was back then. I did not make the basketball team's seventh grade year. I got cut, but I made it my eighth grade because I'm a worker. Put up those jump shots like Steph Curry, although my percentage was probably more than half less what his was. What the fuck am I talking about? 69, 69, 69. This may come as a surprise to many of you, but I have to admit that I, the B-Man, the People's Degenerate, Brian Glass, I'm not a fan of 69 when in terms of the sexual position. Someone once described it, maybe it was Adam Carolla, someone described it as high school shit. Like, oh, you do 69, that's high school shit. And I do concur with that opinion. It does feel very rushed. It feels in my face. It's not romantic to me. The B-Man, I am a lovemaker. Now, I like to be funny sometimes, but when I'm making love, I like to focus. So if my face is between a babe's legs, I like to focus on the epicenter and do the business there. If a lady has her face on Mr. Perfect, I want her focus to be on Mr. Perfect because Mr. Perfect deserves someone's full attention. And I believe that is just. I believe that is right. I believe that is the proper way to make love. Now, when a babe has her fur burger in my face while she has Mr. Perfect in her mouth at the same time, there's too much going on. There's too much. Not enough attention is being put on me. Not enough attention is being put on the babe or the heavyset babe I'm having, oral fixations on at that time. There's just too much action going on. The B-Man, I've never been a multitasker. Again, that's another reason why I'm not big into the threesomes and group sex. But the 69, there's just too much, too quick, not enough enjoyment. It seems like a carnival act. That's how I describe a 69. It's a carnival act. When I'm in the bedroom making love, I don't want to be anything carnival related. I don't want to go into complete detail because this is about 69. Let me know what you think about down in the comments. Do you like this? I think I'm in the majority with this opinion. 69, it's fun once in a blue moon, maybe a few times a year to get... It's not really to get yourself off. It's just more for the giggles of it, to tell your friends afterwards that you did it, more so than the actual... The tingles that you get from doing it. So, and plus, standing up 69, look at these arms. I have noodle arms. I don't have the strength to be holding up a babe in the Undertaker's doomed tombstone position. That's another thing too. I'm a wrestling fan, so anytime I have a lady like upside down holding her up, I just want to give her a tombstone pile driver. Another reason why I refrain from doing the 69 sexual position, because I don't want to do the tombstone and break her neck. That would put a quick end to our sexual endeavor that evening and forever going forward. And the last thing I want to do is have to call an ambulance 911 right after performing a 69 position, A, because I won't get my nut, and B, I might have to pay the ambulance fee, which I believe is $2,000 now. That's a hefty price to try to perform a carnival act, sexual act, that is. Let me know. Anytime I've actually done the 69, I just end up like slapping her butt cheeks and playing bongos while she's... while I'm being Mr. Perfect's being sucked off. So it becomes more of a drum solo, more so than a 69. Also, 69 jokes are kind of petty. They're childish. Now, I am, you all know, my sense of humor is sophomoric, and it is dirty, and, it's anything but highbrow. But something about 69 jokes are a little played out. Same with fart jokes and poop jokes. They're just not for me. It's not my genre. I'm not shitting on anybody. I inserted that pun purposely there. It's not for me. It's not my lane. If you want to do it, you do you. But for me, I'm going to refrain from doing anything sexual. Anything 69 related, whether it's sexually or joke wise, the only time I will make mention of the number 69 is if an athlete's wearing the jersey number, and if when I drive by a building where it dresses number 69, like I did in seventh grade. But again, this is episode number 69. I actually was going to do a Pornhub comments episode for this one, but I forgot to look up porn comments. So we're just going to do a regular Reddit post that I look up earlier in the week. So let's get to that now. This one, and I want to apologize for the vulgar language in this title. I'm not going to, bleep it out because I want to be authentic here. It comes from the subreddit, Fuck You Karen. Ooh, Karen picks a fight with armed police. Circa 2005, I was a teenager sent on a French exchange program. I was paired with a very wealthy family with a huge house, and a mother was kind of crazy. For example, she decided to make a cup of tea inspired by my English presence, but poured boiling water into a glass, which promptly exploded everywhere. My English ass was not impressed. Ooh. Anyways, one day they decided it was very important for me to see their capital, so we all jumped in the minivan and headed for Paris. A mother is driving, dad is in the front, with me and their three daughters in the back. We arrived at the French Parliament building, and this lady is not happy with the view I am getting. It keeps yelling at me to make sure I am looking, and eventually decides to park so that I can take in the sights. The problem is that you are not allowed to park outside the French Parliament for security reasons. We are immediately approached by armed police telling us to move. But this lady is having none of it and starts arguing that she has a tourist on board. They need to be allowed to stay. The gendarmes are not impressed. The girls start yelling at her to drive away, and I consider how likely they are to shoot us as potential terrorists. Eventually, after much shouting and my life flashing before my eyes, she decided the juice wasn't worth the squeeze and drove away. But holy shit, what an insane Karen. This one, this accusation, it makes my blood boil. Now, this mom, this French mother, are her actions over the top? Yes. Is her behavior a little kooky? Yes. Is it the mother I'd want to have when I was a teenager? Absolutely not. Her behavior, though, it doesn't reach the level of the slur that is Karen. Now, yeah, everything she did was over the top, but you calling her out for being a Karen, that's more of an indictment on you than it is your French exchange mother, Karen. I say this because you're citing an event, a situation that happened in 2005. The year now is 2024. That's almost 20 years ago. I don't know what it's like in Europe, but here in America, the statute of limitations for everything other than murder, I do believe, is 20 years max. That might be the most, depending on what state you're in. I got to imagine it's somewhat close or somewhat similar to that in our friends across the pond over in Europe. So you're, even if this was the act of a Karen, it's got to be beyond the statutes of limitations. Therefore, you should not be allowed to call her and her actions Karen nearly 20 years later. So this says so much more about you. You actually, I believe to my core, in my black beaten down heart, that you really don't care about your exchange program mother in France. You wrote this post because you want to be able to relate to the minorities who have real Karen stories and have been yelled at and scorned and beaten by these middle class, upper class Karens here in America. And you want so badly to be able to have a story of your own that you're rummaging through your past to find just an inkling of a Karen. And here you are throwing your exchange mother under her own minivan. So shame on you for this. I don't like you one bit. Really, you don't have, what you just told me is you wrote an entire Reddit post, multiple paragraphs, and all that told me is you've never experienced a Karen in life, because what your exchange mother did was not Karen. And how, like, fuck you for throwing your Karen under her minibus, because just think back to how nice that summer was, how luxurious, how wealth, that was probably the wealthiest summer you've ever experienced in your life. You got to go to France. You lived with a wealthy family. Just go back. Besides that one afternoon where they dragged you to the French Parliament, think about every other day. You got to lay by the pool, work on your golden tan. You got to put your feet in the spa. You probably ate great. You got French bread. You were living the life. You got to live rent-free with a wealthy family near Paris, right on the outskirts of Paris. You were living the dream. And now, nearly 20 years later, you're going to come out that exchange parent and call her a Karen? Nah, Nah, the B-man will have none of it. None of it. You're not a Karen. You're not a Karen, but you're a backstabbing bitch. And sorry, I want to, before I say something I'm going to regret, I need to calm myself down, get my blood pressure down. Listen, we all know exchange parents are a little off. They're not bad people, but we can all agree the wires in their brain, they're just wired a little differently than us normies. Now, does that make them bad people? Absolutely not. If anything, it makes them caring people, but a little too caring. Every exchange parent I've ever met or heard about in my history has been kooky. Now, if we're doing the kooky power rankings, the kooky parent power rankings, the exchange program parents are right ahead of a Jehovah's Witness parents and right behind parents who accidentally hit a squirrel in a drive-by, but stop, pull over, resuscitate it, and keep the squirrel as a pet. That's they're in the middle there. Like exchange parent program parents, that's where they are in the kooky rankings. And we all know that. We all know that going in. It's almost like in baseball, you have unwritten rules. Well, exchange parents, it doesn't need to be said. We all know they're a little kooky. We all know they're a little different. They're not normal. They're a little too excited to show show how great a parent they are. They have a little too much goodwill in their heart, which can be off-putting. Should their name be slandered online because of that? No, absolutely not. If anything, you're being a little hyperbolic with your story. You really think you go to the French Parliament, you have a wealthy couple driving the car with four white teenagers in the back. You really think the police thought you were terrorists? You really think that the police were suspecting you were working on behest of Osama bin Laden in 2005? I think not. You're being hyperbolic. You're just trying to get SJW credit, whatever the fuck you want to call it, woke points. No. My apologies, exchange parent, for calling you a Karen. I was just slipped. You are not a Karen. The student you had. No. You need to be taken to task for using her name in slander. So your penalty, the B-man, I'm going to give you the penalty. You need to go back to France now that you're an adult. Go back to France. Find this wealthy family. You go to the husband. You have to suck him off and swallow his cum, as well as his three son-in-laws, the three guys that married his three daughters. Suck all those three guys off. Obviously, don't tell the daughters or the wife to completion. Swallow their cum. And now you need to. What else do you need to do as a penalty? You need to disown King Charles and bend a knee to whoever is the ruler of France now. I don't know my international politics very well, so whoever is running Paris right now, that's who your ruler is now, not the Great Britain one. So, yeah, I'm not with you with this one. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 69, segment 2, roll 69, rolls off the tongue so smoothly. If you can see between my chair and my table, if you're watching this on YouTube, I do have a 69 between here. It's the comic book, what's it called? Sex to Sexty number 69. That was a dirty comic book that was popular in the 70s. And if you're not aware, everything on my backdrop, from the book, the erotic literature, to the newspapers, to the comics, they're all from the 1970s. That is the theme of verbal graffiti. The B-man, I have a love affair, an adulation, a soft spot in my heart for all things New York City 1970s smut related? I'm not. What's become of Times Square, the Disneyification, the ads, the everything Times Square is today, I scoff at. It breaks my heart. I yearn for the days when you could walk through Times Square and pay 25 cents for a peep show. I never got to experience that, but whenever I see videos of that or old movies, whether it's Mean Streets, Taxi, what's the one with John Travolta? A Saturday Night Fever. That might have come out in the 80s, but it was based in 1970s disco age in New York City in the 70s. I that time period, the art, the music, the film, the TV, the literature, the erotic literature, to me, that was a sweet spot for American arts. So this is an homage to that era. So yeah, if any of you were wondering, that's what that's all about. And earlier today, before I was, began filming, I ran 4 miles at a trail I like. I'm trying to get physically fit for the upcoming Civil War that may or may not be developing soon. But if it does happen, I want to be able to run away from the guns. I'm a little pussy, so I'm not going to be fighting. I'm going to be running from it. But after I run, I go to this cafe. I like to load up on caffeine to re-energize me. And I also bought, look at this. I bought this cookie. It's about the size of my palm. It's bigger than a baby's head. After this episode, and it's past midnight right now, I am going to open a nice cold Corona can because I am a man of the people, and I'm going to eat this entire cookie. This is probably 1,200 wasted calories. And here's the thing. I have the diet of an obese person, but I am very skinny. I am 160 pounds. I'm about as skinny as I can be, but I eat like the fattest, like one of those people, like those 600 pound people you see at the casino who ride the scooters and beep at you to get out of the way. Those assholes, I eat worse than they do. I'm going to eat this entire cookie, and then I'm probably going to eat potato chips tomorrow morning. Anytime I have a pint of Friendly's ice cream, I eat the entire pint. That doesn't last me a week. That lasts me one evening. I feel guilty that I'm able to eat this way and not gain weight. And that is why I've never been one to make fun of someone's weight, whether they're too skinny or too fat or obese. And I don't even like saying the word fat. I'll use the term fatty in jest. I don't mean it as an insult because I know I was just blessed with genes where I can eat food and it comes out my butthole and I don't gain it around my stomach. I'm not perfect. I have these noodly arms, and a lot of the babes do not like noodly arms without huge biceps. So if you're an obese person with huge biceps, you got that going for you. And it's off-putting. There have been so many times where I'll be doing stand-up comedy and I'll see a comic get on stage and then start ripping someone in the front row for being overweight. And when you do that, immediately everyone in the audience is like, fuck you. And they're against the comedian because some people can't help what their weight is or what their body is. So to be calling that out in a room full of strangers, it's rude. It's petty. It's low hanging fruit, as they say. So don't do it if you're a comic. Oh, no, fuck me. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your life. But it's probably not going to work unless you're just a hell of a comedian. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that cookie and that beer. But we got some business we got to take care of before I get to do that. So let's get into it. This one comes from the subreddit I found on Rant. Okay. Why can't we just enjoy the seasons when they are? ? Listen, you do you and do what makes you happy. However, when corporate and marketing realizes it, they ruin it. Summer goes until September 21st, Northern Hemisphere. I'm tired of seeing the it's the burr months, time for fall. It's literally not yet. And as soon as it's October, it's just Halloween. And as soon as it's November, it's Christmas. Fuck Thanksgiving, I guess, if you're in the US. like stopped rushing it. I saw pumpkin spice flavored apple cider the other day. That monstrosity is uncalled for and out way too early. Again, you do you, and if getting the fall flavored drinks makes you happy and wearing flannel, go for it. But when it's all anyone will talk about and it's all the marketing is done is pushing fall and Halloween and Christmas months too early, it gets so old so fast. Appreciate the moment in the moment. The end of summer is so beautiful. I love fall, but I'm not rushing to get to it. Christmas doesn't need to be, sorry, to last two whole months, especially since it's a religious holiday. Not everyone celebrates. Ouch. Please, just enjoy the moment. Well, clearly, by the tone of your post, you do care about us and how we're living our lives. So allow me a moment to reach into my back pocket and give you a go fuck yourself, ma'am. You're wrong. All the nerds who are reading a textbook and bending the knee to their winter solstice, you're just as wrong as all the flat earthers. Let me, the bee man, tell you how the seasons work. Okay, from Memorial Day through Labor Day is summer. Fall, also known as autumn, goes from Labor Day to November 1st. That is autumn, fall. Christmas goes from November 1st through December 31st. Now, I will agree with you. I'll meet you halfway with this point. Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas should not be played or listened to until the day after Thanksgiving. Playing that November 1st, that's a bridge too far for even me. Okay, I agree with you with that. And then from January 1st through April Fool's Day, that is winter. And from April 2nd through Memorial Day, like up to Memorial Day weekend, that is the worst season of them all, which is spring. And spring is the worst of the five seasons. And yes, there are five seasons because Christmas is its own separate season. But spring is the worst of all the five seasons because it's such a cock tease. All I want is 85 degree weather where I could run with my shirt off. But what you get in spring is just a bunch of pollen, my nose running, my eyes are itching, and it's still chilly at night. It's like pre-cum. It's fine, but it's not what I want. I want that hot, frothy, gooey white stuff coming out of my dick. I don't. The pre-cum is just a precursor. It's just a fluffer, and it's as I said, it's a cock tease. And here in Connecticut, you may think like mid-September is still summer, late summer, but it's not. It's not. If you drive around Connecticut or anywhere in the Northeast in mid-September, the leaves will be starting to turn that beautiful golden yellowish color. So the trees don't agree with you. The trees are spitting on your child tantrum that you're going through right now. Of all the things happening in this country right now, literally, the American empire as we know it is collapsing right in front of us. And here you are on the internet bitching and complaining about some overworked and sleep deprived mother of three ordering a spice latte and eating a slice of pumpkin pie in early September. That is what you're bitching about? No, I don't allow it. I am punishing you. Please give me your cell phone and go to your bedroom and lock your door and think about what you just said for the rest of the night. That is so uncalled for. So uncalled for. All right, the empire is collapsing. And the only thing you can see are Santa Claus inflatables at Home Depot before Thanksgiving. It's laughable, your defense. It's such a basic bitch argument you're giving me. It's like not even original. Like, if you're going to complain about the seasons, do it. Be creative. Show me some substance. This is office conversation. This is the type of argument that your manager will send out to the team early fall to get everyone's take, because it's a safe argument. It's a safe thing to bitch about. I'm not having any of it. Keep that bedroom door locked. No dinner for you tonight, right? No TV dinner for you this evening. You don't deserve like the calories I'm going to have after this episode. As for the enjoy the moment, seize the day, carpe diem, all that bullshit. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your late summer, early fall afternoon. But do know. That makes you a loser, okay? Because winners like me, who have 37 followers on YouTube as of right now, we're winners. We're thinking about tomorrow, next week. Yeah, if you could see my notebook, which I have behind the camera right here, I already have notes, anecdotes, topics to talk about for next week's episodes. I'm not thinking about today. I'm thinking about the future, okay? When you go out with your girlfriends and you're having espresso martinis and appetizers from Chili's and discussing all the drama of the day, do know that I, a winner, am in the laboratory thinking, conjuring up jokes and premises for my next stand-up appearance, because I'm thinking about the future. That's winning mentality. Carpe diem is for losers. Thinking about the future in the current moment, that's how you be productive. That's how you be a content creator. That's how you make something of yourself in this world. And you don't give a fuck what the seasons are, because you're getting down to business. And that's what corporate America is doing. That's why corporate America, while their bottom line is very thick with lots of money, because they're all they're selling us Americans, is what we want. And we want our spiced lattes as soon as we can get them. So don't be blaming corporate America for giving us what we want, because that's corporate America. That's how it works here. We're in a rush. If you want to be carpe diem and smoke your cig and enjoy the brisk late summer evening, go to Europe. But here in America, we're workers. We're working tomorrow, today. All right? We're gonna be on Mars because of America, not because of your slow carpe diem, seize the day. Fuck you. And as the great philosopher Ice-T once said, don't hate the player, hate the game. Now, on to our next segment. This is a new segment I'm introducing, Gravel Graffiti. I'm going to read an erotic literature book for all of you. I'm going to read a page per episode. Last episode, I was going to start this new segment, so I'm going to read two pages to start off. This book I'm going to read is The Salesman's Wife by the famous author John Lawrence. And this was written in 1977. Chapter 1. Alan Burns gazed down at his young bride, and as he did, a flash of pride surged through him. She was such a beautiful creature. He considered himself the luckiest of men to have her as his wife. She had raven black hair that hung loosely in long, satiny strands and framed her lovely face. Her eyes were deep blue and sparkling. Her nose was straight and turned up slightly to give her a charming, girlish look that Alan found completely enchanting. Her lips were full and tinged with reddish color. Her cheeks bloomed like pink carnations against the alabaster whiteness of her skin. Her delicate, swan-like neck curved gently into her creamy shoulders, and her lithe, subtle body was teasingly visible through the gauzy folds of her nightie as her large, firmly thrust breasts rose and fell softly. In all of Seattle, In all of Seattle, Alan knew there was no girl as ravishingly beautiful as his Pamela. It gave him a tremendous sense of masculine pride when she accompanied him to the storehouse on occasion, and he saw the looks of envy and admiration in the eyes of his co-workers. He drew her close to him as a surge of passion rippled through his broad, powerful, built body. "Mmm," he moaned as he nibbled playfully on her ear. "You're so nice." Pamela sighed sweetly and snuggled next to her strong, young husband. She was glad that she had married him, for he was a handsome, rugged man, the kind she had dreamed about from her narrow bed in boarding school, where she had lived from the earliest childhood when her parents were killed in a tornado that swept through their home in Kansas. She had been very much alone all through her girlhood and read quite a bit. She had yearned for someone to come to help and sweep her off her feet, a handsome Prince Charming, just like in the romance novels she read day after day in her lonely dormitory. When she met Alan at 17, he seemed a perfect fulfillment of her innocent dreams. He was 21, with the vitality and strength that delighted her. His face was extremely good-looking in a rugged, masculine way, with light blonde hair and blue eyes. She remembered the first time she saw him on the street. He had just come back from a trip to Phoenix. He was tired and dirty from his trip, still dressed in tight, soiled denim, traveling clothes, and heavy black cowboy boots. Yet to Pamela, he looked like a god. Till next episode, go suck a fat one.